We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Today's episode is going to be a free-flowing conversation with a new acquaintance, but one who came highly recommended for this podcast. I think you'll find out why by the end of the episode. Our guest is Josh Rubin, a theater director and teacher at Northwest Whitfield High School in Tunnel Hill, Georgia. That doesn't begin to delve into who he is, so stay tuned. Josh Rubin, welcome, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I cannot believe that you're taking time out to talk to lowly little old me, but I'm thrilled. Thank you so much.
No, that's that. I don't consider you lowly little, especially as we get into what you've done. And I just want to say that it was Ryan Reese who recommended you, one of your colleagues, I believe, at the high school. And but I had known and heard of you before that. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, no, because, you know, I taught at Dalton State. And so
I
get a lot of Northwest Whitfield kids and graduates, excuse me. And I'm retired now. But so you've probably known students that were in my classes and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
I just want to apologize for anything that may have occurred between you and any of my former students.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Okay.
We know how that goes. So you mentioned when we were going back and forth on the Facebook Messenger that you're currently directing a show in Chattanooga. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, I'm directing SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical at the Chattanooga Theater Center. I know. And your reaction is exactly what most people have the first time they hear of that show. And it was actually my reaction as well. But it came out several years ago and it was nominated for every Tony Award. It won many other awards and it was nominated. It set the record that year. It and Mean Girls were nominated for the most Tony Awards. Great show. And Nickelodeon, who owns SpongeBob, they put out a recorded version of the show that I came upon and I watched and I showed my students. And I showed my students this show every year as a way to teach about technical theater. A lot of tech is in this show, a lot of costumes and special effects. But even with all of those bells and whistles, it's a really, really good story and really, really well told with great music. And so I was watching this show. I was watching with my students, not really knowing what to expect because it was toward the end of the school year. Things were winding down. And okay, we just want to do something fun as a fun project. Let's watch this show. And it just blew me away with how much is going on with it. So I did that for many, many years. And when the opportunity came along at the Chattanooga Theater Center, where I saw it was on their schedule, I was thinking, well, there's really not a role for me in the show. I mean, I love doing musicals and I still perform from time to time, especially over the summers, but I've never directed at the theater center before. I've done a lot of shows there. And it was the end of last year where they had their awards ceremony. Most theaters, professional as well as community theaters, they have their award ceremonies. I had done a wonderful production that season of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Mm.
I was there for the award ceremony, won some things, getting to see all the other people from all the other casts, all the other shows from that season. And the creative director of the Chattanooga Theater Center, Rodney Van Valkenburg, he was there. I've known him forever. And I said, look, if you already have somebody lined up, I understand. But just in case, if you are interested, I would love to direct SpongeBob. And his eyes got wide and he said, wait right here. And he went over and he talked to some of the board members that were there that night as well. He said, we're going to talk about this. And the next day I got an email and I was thrilled. So anyway, it's going great. We're having a ball. Vincent Hale is a genius musical theater vocal director. This show is going to sound like no show you've ever heard. Lindsay Fusel, who's a choreographer, who is a genius, who I've known for years. It's not just a kiddie kid show. I mean, it's appropriate for kids and families, but you're going to see things and the cast and the talent and the singing. It's something really special. So we're doing that. It'll open July 18th of this year.
Okay. So, I want to make a little plug for that on the podcast.
You.
So, yeah, that's great. Didn't you know you were supposed to take off in the summer?
I'm often told that, especially by my wife. But she's a creative person as well. She is an actor and a director and a writer, and we're always working. We're doing shows, planning shows, writing shows. I write adaptations of scripts. A lot of the things I would do with my students, she's constantly writing. She also advises, me obviously, but she also advises and helps out, theater directors from schools all over the country. So we don't stop. Unlike the thing that we say at Northwest Whitfield High School where I teach, is you have football season, you have basketball season, the theater season never stops. We go all the way through. So yeah.
Okay.
Always busy.
So that's exciting then. And you're wearing me out already with that. I just retired and I'm trying to get used to this retirement thing. And I got so much to do. So much I want to do. And
yeah,
I'm so tired after 47 years of this. So I kind of go back and forth, but, all right. So this is a podcast about creativity in general, but I come at it. It's not the arts necessarily. It's just it could be entrepreneurship. It can be community service. It can be even parenting in some cases. And I've been doing this for about 3 years. And so I want to find out more about you, how you got to this area. I have the impression you're a transplant.
Yes.
Me too. So tell us about
where are you from?
Your early life. I'm from Maryland.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Spent some time in Baltimore for a while. Uh-huh. I love DC. Anyway. Yes, I'm a transplant as well. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'm a Gen Xer, as if you couldn't tell.
Uh-huh.
My father was involved in the steel business up there. But then he got into sales and became a sales person. And was always on the go. And then when the economy started to do what the economy often does, we left Pittsburgh, went to Chicago, and spent a lot of my formative years in Chicago. We lived just outside in a suburb called Wheeling, Illinois. Wheeling, the village with a feeling. That's actually the slogan as you drive in. Anyway, so we were there for quite some time. And that's when my mother, who was a housewife, she decided to expand her horizons as well, and she got into marketing research, and her career led us to Atlanta, and we settled in Atlanta. And so even though I spent my early years up north, born a Yankee, I really grew up down in Atlanta, specifically in Marietta, Georgia, where I cut my teeth and went to high school down at Lassiter High School down in Marietta. And began my acting and everything else. And so, yeah. So even though I am Yankee born, I'm Southern bred and proud to be so.
Yeah. Okay. So your parents weren't really in theater arts then, but they,
no, but my father, correct. But my father, when he was in school, he was very active in the theater, in the theater world when he was in high school. As was my mother, took us to plays all the time, especially in Chicago. A lot of phenomenal theaters, professional, all over the place. And my one of my earliest theater memories, we went to a professional dinner theater and saw a show that really changed my life and got me thinking about it at an early age, was the Yankee Doodle Dandy, live version of the George M. Cohan story.
Mm-hmm.
But you're correct, that even though they were not professional theater people, being in sales, as both my parents were, a lot of theater, lot of character and audience participation and understanding how to read people and work with people and tell stories in order to try to keep them entertained and keep them interested in order to make a sale. So there's a lot of theater skill that goes on with with that. And I've tried to extend that into my work as a teacher, trying to expand, you know, you're talking about how you talk about creativity that is not just arts related. Well, I try to do the same thing in my teaching. Yeah. Everything that I do with theater is not just to potentially get these kids into theater or show business careers, but it's how to use theater as a communication tool, as a skill in any career that you might go into. You can use these skills and apply these skills in that career.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because all the arts have that, I don't want to call it a problem, but challenge. There's the assumption, oh, you're studying theater because you want to be an actor.
Exactly.
Well, I've met other people who took the theater and used it in a whole different realm, you know, going to corporate training and other kinds of things to the outside of the, you know, production.
Oh, so. Very much so. Yeah. You talk about, you know, I'm supposed to take a break during the summer. One of the things that I do over many summers is I work with lawyers.
Oh.
I work for many, many years. I haven't done it in the last year or so because the other things, I've been busy doing other things, but the National Criminal Defense College, held down at Mercer University a couple times a year. These are professional lawyers. These are not law students. These are actually practicing attorneys. And they come together, as I said, a couple times a year, and myself and my other actor friends, we are called upon and we're hired. We go down and we essentially do mock trial. We become witnesses in various cases, a murder trial, for example, or it might be dealing with wills and real estate issues. Anyway, we study what the cases are. We study who the characters are. And then we pretend to be those people. And then the lawyers come and they cross-examine us, or they do direct examination or impeachment. And then we advise them about their courtroom technique and how well they're speaking. And are they connecting with the jury? Are they connecting with their witnesses? So, yes. So the long story short, there are many, many ways to use the skills of theater in every other career. I've worked with doctors. I've worked with medical students in their bedside manner. You know, how do you tell a family that their child has cancer? Or how do you tell someone that their father is recovering and things are going to be good? So there, while people often assume that, yeah, theater is all pretend and it's just for fun, and it can be, and it certainly should be, but there are very practical real world applications for all of these things.
Yeah. We had the health professionals department at the college wanted people to have to come in and be place patients, you know, and the social workers did that too. They wanted our students to just who were in theater to play the patients, so they would have someone to interact with who was you know, knew how to do that kind of thing, which was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. You're even busier than I thought. Because I look at what experience I have in theater, it's so time consuming. But I guess you probably, you know, if you're a professional, you learn to do it, so it's not you know, it's like get it done. It's not we're going to be here all night. We're going to get the work done. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which is one of the things that it took me a long time to learn. Mm-hmm. It's one of the hardest things to teach, I found, from my young students, is how to work efficiently.
Yeah.
And again, this is one of those things that extends beyond theater into any career. But yeah, you get in there. The age old mantra is, you know, show up, be on time.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint,
batteries,
tools,
toilet paper,
extension cords, grocery items,
hardware for my cabinets,
snack items, crackers, and some canned goods stuff,
shop vac supplies, toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
know your lines and don't trip over the furniture. Mm-hmm. That's the joke that we often apply when working in the theater. Well, two of those things are actually true in any job you have. Show up on time.
Yeah.
And at least in the theater world and many other jobs as well, that means getting there a little bit early.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And know what you're doing. You need to know the script before you walk in. You have to do your homework. One of the things I tell all my students is if you hate homework, do not think for one second about trying to become an actor. Okay. If you're attracted to the glamour of show business, which is wonderful, there's a lot of work that goes into that outside of being on stage or in front of a camera. Mm-hmm. You have to do the research. You have to know your script and do the memorization and do all those other things. And there are skills and tips and tricks that we teach to help with the memorization. But you got to do the work. And then, of course, you know, don't trip over the furniture. Which is true. That just basically means be aware of things. Help each other out. Be nice to each other. Oh, my goodness. What a skill. What a gift that can be.
Well, and you know, that's interesting, too, because it's such a collaborative art form.
Yes.
And massively collaborative. And it's not about the star. It's about a team.
Correct.
Which is, you know, the same thing that we're supposed to learn in sports. So it's really the same, except that it uses probably more of your intellect. And
some of the smartest people I've ever known are professional athletes.
Oh, okay.
They have the
reputation of being kind of not.
And that is true. Right. And just as actors have the reputation of being all about ourselves, which, you know, as I look at myself on this podcast, oh, I need to do some work here. Anyway, as I look at my image. So, but you're correct that there are things that sports teach, that the theater teachers, that the arts teach, that are very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you said, the collaborative aspect of it, that there is teamwork. There is the opportunity for leadership in sports as well as in the arts. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, you know, getting along with each other is essential, and being nice to people is essential, especially if you're trying to make a career in it, because there are dozens of stories like this. And it's actually true in my case when I was working with the Alliance Theater. The young man who at that time was the receptionist, who I would see on a daily basis to go and get messages and check in on things and schedules, he's now running the Alliance Theater. He is now the artistic director of the Alliance Theater. His name is Chris Moses, a great, great guy who I haven't seen, geez, in probably 20 years since I've been here in Chattanooga. But that's an example. If you're nice to people, the person who's bringing you, you know, a sandwich on Monday could be running everything by Friday. And if you're nice to that person and you get along with them and you have a good, respectful, professional relationship, that benefits everybody. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's huge.
And that's, you know, at the college, we have an affiliation with the Georgia Film Academy.
Yep.
We've had about 100 students go there. And mm-hmm. some of them, I think they get into it and they learn what they're supposed to get the grade. But I think they realize, oh, this is too much like work. You know,
it really is.
And, you know, and they have to show up. I tell them, if you're on time, you're late, you know, that's a big thing. And if you just have to be, sometimes you just have to be a PA, which means carrying stuff. And, you know, that's how you start. And
no, that's how you start. But that's also how you learn. That's
right.
Also how you learn to do the job. I tell my students all the time, oh, I don't, like, you know, we'll cast a musical. Oh, Mr. Rubin, I'm only in the background. I'm only in the ensemble. That's where you learn how to do a show. You see how it works. I mean, we all started off that way. I tell my students, I never had a lead role until I was in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. I was always a sidekick. I was always in the ensemble. And I loved it. And I got paid. I got to work with amazing people. I was treated well. I was treated respectfully. And then when my opportunity came to have larger roles, and I knew what I was doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't intimidated. I wasn't afraid. So yeah, being a PA and carrying the cable and being a grip and doing all of those things, that's how you learn the job. And
How long have you been at Northwest Whitfield? And were you at other high schools before that?
Yeah, I was going to tell you, I never imagined, it was never on my radar to become a classroom teacher.
Oh.
It was really never on my radar to become a teacher in the first place. I thought I was going to go into sales and marketing. I thought I was going to become an actor. I thought I was going to direct and write, which I'm doing all of those things. But I never thought I'd become a teacher. So when I moved, when I left my teaching and acting career in Atlanta, and I came here to Chattanooga after, geez, 20 years on the road and on the hustle doing shows. I worked first at Ooltewah High School, up here in Hamilton County.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for about 5 years. And then I came to Northwest 2007, I believe, was my first year. And it's a fun story. How did I make the switch from teaching in Hamilton County in Chattanooga to North Georgia? The principal at Northwest Whitfield at the time came to a show that I was directing in Chattanooga. I had time in my school career or in my school life at Ooltewah High School to teach to direct a play. I was directing a production of Steel Magnolias,
mm-hmm.
Oak Street Playhouse in downtown Chattanooga. And one of the women who was in the cast was an English teacher at Northwest. So a bunch of the faculty, a bunch of her friends at Northwest came and saw the show, including the principal. And the principal cornered me after the show and said, I've heard wonderful things. And would you be interested in coming to help us build our program at Northwest? Are you happy where you are at Ooltewah? I said, I'm thrilled at Ooltewah. I love teaching in Hamilton County. They're good, good people. They're a great school. But Northwest offered me opportunities to help build a program from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I had to take it. So that's what happened. Okay. And I've been there ever since. It's been going great.
All right. So you've had it. Yeah, that's a long time. It's 18 years then.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. How do you build? I mean, this is where the creativity comes in. How do you build a theater program?
It didn't come naturally to me. So what I do, and my father, may he rest in peace, taught me this. Surround yourself with people who are smarter and better and more talented than you. Mm-hmm. And I've been very fortunate in my life that I've had very, very smart people. So I asked around. I said, you know, what do I need to do? What do I need to focus on? And I work with great people in Atlanta, all over the country, mm-hmm. as well as other teachers at Northwest who were very helpful and very influential. So I got to know the kids. I got to know what I needed to do as a teacher and looking at the opportunities, you know, where do we want to go? So the first thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to expand the program. I did not want the theater program to be what it is at so many schools, which is just a place for the quote unquote theater kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I took an active role and I worked with the athletic coaches. I worked with other teachers who were involved with other extracurricular activities. What can I do to include your kids in my program? I don't want to take kids away from your program, but is there a way we can share and collaborate? What can I do to help you? What can you do to help me? And it worked out very well. And I've gotten along great with all the coaches, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to build a program was similar to what I said earlier about getting along with people. I never, you know, there's a stereotype in high schools. In fact, you know, the show High School Musical is based on this, where you have the theater teacher and the basketball coach butting heads constantly and fighting. Well, I was determined not to let that happen. I was going to be a resource. I was going to help. I was going to encourage. Mm-hmm. And that attitude served me well. And very soon we went from having the first show I did at Northwest, the first musical, I think I had like 30 kids in the cast. And the next show that I did had over 100. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've been ever since. And I tell the kids, I said, look, go play football, go play basketball, be in the marching band, do cheerleading. But when the opportunity comes along and you want to be in a show, as long as your grades are good, as long as you're doing what you need to do in the classroom, I can work around you. I can schedule around you. Now, it makes my job much harder that way as a director because, okay, I don't have these 8, 10, 12 kids because they're off, you know, they're out of at another school playing a game or they're doing this. But it's worked out. One story that I love to tell is I think it was the first time I did the show Grease. Every high school eventually does Grease at some point.
Yeah.
So I did Grease. And there were a couple of young women in the cast who also play basketball. They are our girls' basketball team wound up going to the state finals.
Mm.
When were the state finals? The state finals were the week before we opened the show.
Sure. Of course.
So I said, go. Go play. Yeah. You can still do the show when you come back. And they did. And we actually stopped rehearsal one day on a Saturday to watch them play their game. Now, sadly, they came in second. They were the runners up in the state. But when they came back, the two or three girls who were on stage, I gave free tickets to the entire team. Mm-hmm. And even though it was a sellout crowd and we had the opportunity to make a lot of money, because it's Greece, that's why we all do it, because it makes a lot of money. I wanted to show that we are a community. We are a school community. It's not just the theater program. It's for the whole school. And we had a ball. And when those girls came out and they did their part in the show, all their friends on the basketball team went crazy for them. It was a wonderful bonding experience for everybody. So that's how I went about trying to build a program, showing that theater was something for everybody. Just like we all want to go on Friday nights to cheer on the football team, to cheer on the band, cheer on the cheerleaders. I want people to come and have that same experience in the theater.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, that's great. Great outlook and advice. Yeah. So we've already talked about one of my questions is what does theater offer young people that other activities perhaps cannot? And your viewpoint is so positive that they're all good, but theater adds a certain, part of that. And it's that constant challenge of being, like you said, butting heads, that we're about this and it's our turf and all that is so hard to break because it's so ingrained in people. And it's media. I mean, like you say, the movies always make it out, and they have stereotypes of what the theater people are like versus the jocks and all that.
That's a very easy story to tell. It's an easy story to tell. Yeah. It's a very easy idea to market where, we live in a culture where everything is a zero-sum game, right? Uh-huh. You're either winning or you're losing. There's always a winner or a loser. There's always a competition. You're either this or you're that. Well, in the theater, there is no winning and losing. Okay. We're all there together for the same goal, to put on the best show possible. Well, what does that look like? In sports are a very easy concept, hard to do, but conceptually they're very easy. Whoever has the most points on the board, that's the winner. If you win the game, you're a success. If you score the touchdown, you're a success.
Yeah.
If you fumble the football, if you make an error, then you failed in some way. Well, in theater, we don't deal with those with those terms. In theater, if you're in the show, you are part of the cast. And if we do a good show, if the audience is applauding.
You live for planning the perfect trip. The thrill of comparing hotels, scoring that impossible reservation, and piecing together an unforgettable itinerary. You already think like a travel advisor, so why not just be one? Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan vacations and help others travel well. As a Fora advisor, you'll be set up for success with best-in-class training, powerful booking tools, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider tips. Fora helps you turn your love of planning vacations into a business with a flexible, meaningful stream of income with commission on every hotel, cruise, and activity you book. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred partners, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout, giving you and your clients the kind of elevated travel experiences regular travelers simply don't get. Getting started is as easy as booking trips for people you already know. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/earn. That's foratravel.com/earn.
And people feel like they spent, the $20 or $30 or maybe the show is for free, but there's still an investment. They took time out of their lives to come and see your show. They took an hour or two or three hours to come to the theater. And if people walk away and they feel like they've enjoyed their time, that they were entertained or they gained some insight, then boom, you're a success. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There was a sign of my room for many, many years, which is, what are the major differences between sports and the arts? Well, in sports, if you're hurt, you can't play. You sit on the bench, right? Well, it's theater, at least in my program. If you're hurt, fine. We'll grab a crutch and go out there and tap dance on one leg. Okay. If you're a second tier player on a football team or basketball, you're going to sit on the bench. And maybe you get in the game, maybe you don't. Well, in theater, at least in my program, everyone's on stage at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
We do not have, I have understudies from time to time, but even the understudies, they're in the show. They're performing something. They're singing something. So that's the major difference. So while, as I said earlier, while there are so many similarities between sports and we teach the same things and we're all in this together, to educate kids and help them become successful, we just go about it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And both ways, and it all works. Okay. Kids are very successful and do great things in sports. As I said, I get along with all the athletic coaches. We really try to support each other. At least at my school, we do. I've heard horror stories.
Yeah, I bet you have.
Yeah, I always have. Oh, yeah. And what's the point of that? Why? You know, we're here to have a good time. We're here to have fun. We're here to learn. We want kids to, you know, to do the right thing. And that in and of itself is a challenge enough. So why are we going to make our lives even harder by fighting over things that really don't need to be fought over? So, yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk now about some of your favorite shows that you've directed at the high school and why. Yeah. Although, before I get into that, you said you were recently in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah.
Where was that?
That was at the Chattanooga Theater Center.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes.
That's a heavy thing.
It really, really was. I've been very fortunate in my career. I know the term diversity is kind of a touchstone term right now, but one of the things I love about theater, and I encourage this to my students, is you can do anything.
Yeah.
In terms of subject matter, in terms of, you know, I love to sing and dance. I love the old school musicals, but I also love to do heavy duty drama. We do a lot of Shakespeare at my school. So diversity is really what it's all about. Uh-huh. So yeah, the opportunity came along. And it was at the exact wrong time at the exact wrong moment in history, but it had to happen, which is I was in the middle of directing for competition, the students at Northwest, an adaptation of Shakespeare that I wrote myself of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to competition with this play and we're doing a great job with it. Kids are working really hard. But then a friend of mine, who is a genius director, I use that term genius a lot, but as I said earlier, I surround myself with very smart people. If I'm ever the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room. But her name is Suzanne Smart. She's an incredible actor herself. She's a director. She had an issue. One of the cast members in Virginia Woolf had a health issue. He was a good friend of mine. And so they had a month before they opened.
Oh.
And they tried contacting the other actors, some things, and it was a scheduling issue. And so she basically just called my wife, who's my de facto agent. And she and my wife have been friends forever. And they said, what do you do it? And I because I've been doing this so long, I have the ability, because I was taught by great teachers, how to memorize lines quickly.
Uh-huh.
So it was never a show I wanted to do. It was never on my bucket list, as it were, even though it is a great part and a great role. So I took it on.
Who'd you play?
I played George.
Oh, you played George. Okay.
I played George. Oh. Yeah. And for those who don't know, it's a four-person play.
Yeah.
And George and Martha, the classic, the popular couple, constantly butting heads. A lot of drinking in the show. So I took that on and it was one of the best acting experiences of my life. The woman who played Martha, Wendy, she and I have been friends for a long time and it was incredible. And we brought things to the role that I assumed it was all about the fighting. That's just where my head was. But Suzanne being the director that she is, and Wendy being the actor that she is, and the other folks who are in the show with us, we explored and developed some things. And at one point there was a chemistry, let's just say, a very, very physical chemistry that Wendy and I had on stage. And I talked to my wife about it. My wife said, yeah, go, just go kiss her. Do whatever you need. Because my wife's a theater person. She's all about telling the story. And as long as it's appropriate for the story, go for it. And so that's what we did. And I told my students, you're not allowed to come and see this show unless you come with mom and dad, because there's language in it, there's drinking in it. It's a very, very adult show, as you know. Uh-huh. And several of my kids did come and see me, and they did not expect me, Mr. Rubin, Mr. You know, goofy, funny, happy guy, to be in a show like this and do what I did. And they were thrilled with it. And it was one of the best experiences of my life so far. So, yeah.
Okay. That's very interesting. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, back to where I was going with that. Yes. Some of your favorite shows you've directed at high school. And do you do two shows a year or something like that?
We do more than that. Major shows a year. We do in the fall, we do our competition play.
Okay.
The one act play competition, which we've had a lot of success with. We've won many, many championships with it. We've been to state several times, have been state runner up many times in a row. I've had, anyway, so we do the one act play and then we do our big spring musical. But in between that, we do an original play for at Christmas time. We invite the elementary, middle and middle schools to come to the show and we perform for them. We perform the entire week. It's like a week long field trip for the drama students.
Yeah.
And the kids come. We do an improv comedy show. We have an improv comedy team, the funniest high school improv comedy team in North Georgia, as we say. And we do at least one show a year. We've been able to do two shows a year some years. We're going to try to get back to that schedule. We have a ball with that. That is so much fun to do. And then we started doing a show this year. A bunch of alums came back and basically cornered me after the musical because they all come back to see the musicals every year and encourage their friends and their younger siblings who are now in the program. And they cornered me and said, we want to do an alumni talent show. I was like, okay. So they put this whole thing together and it was all alums, many of whom graduated 5, 6, 7 years ago. And they just did all the songs from shows that they loved to do when they were in high school with me. They've done other songs and it was so much fun. We had a ball with it. So we're going to try to keep that going as well. So we do at least two big shows a year, but as I said, I would say on average, we do between 6 and 7 shows a year.
Wow.
Throughout the entire course of the year. And you asked about my favorite shows. I've loved every show we've done. I've enjoyed the experience. However, a couple of my favorites have been, I love directing Little Shop of Horrors. It was the second show that I did. At Northwest, I loved it. It was so much fun to do with the puppet. I'm a nerd. I like all the technology. I mean, I love the words and the deep thought and the comedy and the timing of being an actor. But I also love all the technology as well, and with the puppets and everything else. So that was a lot of fun to do, and great music and a great story. And then another show that I had a ball doing was a couple of years ago. We did Chicago.
Oh wow!
And yeah. We were able to get a script that legally we have permission to take out a lot of the more R-rated subject matter. And if you ever saw the Broadway revival, it's been playing for almost 25 years now. The girls are not in bikinis. No. The girls are dressed appropriately. And we did that show and I love that show. I love dance. I love watching great dance. And we had the opportunity with that show. We were very fortunate in Dalton. We have several phenomenal dance schools and dance studios. And I was able to schedule the show so that a lot of those, it's almost all girls that do dance these days. Darn it. Yeah. You need to get more boys involved with dance in general. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were able to come and do the show. And because normally they cannot do my musicals because where it just falls in the schedule. I rescheduled the show so that they could be in it and they had a ball. And it was a lot of fun to do. I love that show. Other shows that we've done that I've really enjoyed that I don't see myself doing again for quite some time because of political and other issues. Hairspray. I love doing Hairspray. Great, great show, great music. But because of the racial factors and political issues, I'm just afraid of that show right now and others. And then another show that I loved was one of my favorites of all time. It's called Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Oh, yeah. That's an old one.
Again, tap dancing, classic 1930s. So I love that show as well. So those are some of my favorites that I've directed. And then, of course, all the Shakespeare, which I love. I love doing Shakespeare with the kids.
So the plays, the actual scripts or books, are they somehow altered than what would be on Broadway?
Sometimes.
High school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's. It's become a cottage industry. It's actually a major component of show business right now, but especially the Broadway world, which is they write shows and produce them specifically for marketing to schools and community theater.
Uh-huh.
A lot of shows doing that right now. It's a reason why so many Broadway shows, so many original shows are all about young people now. You know, shows like Mean Girls. And even a show like Hadestown and others, it's all about young people or the experience of young love. And it's because those shows, while they're phenomenal, they're great shows, but they're very easily sold to schools. And what they can do is they take the show and they make what's called the high school version, or some cases they call them the junior version of the show that they can then sell and market. We have not done a junior version yet of any shows. I've done as I said, I got permission to cut down and adapt some shows to make them a little bit shorter, take out some of the bad language.
Yeah.
But a show like that might be on the horizon. So who knows? Mm-hmm. That's really where the industry is going right now. So
I wondered how often when I hear a high school is doing some really elaborate play, I'm like, how are they doing that with high school kids, 16 and 18 year olds, you know?
And so, years ago, I mean, there were schools, none around here of which I'm aware, but there were schools all over the country doing a show like Rent.
Wow.
And I'm like, how the heck does a high school do Rent?
Yeah.
Well, some do, you know, what was it? Spring Awakening. Great show. All about coming of age and being physical with your youthfulness. Mm-hmm. I would never want to direct that show. It would just make me feel weird. Uh-huh. But people do it. It's a great show, and there've been some phenomenal productions of it. So yeah, but that's how. So it's really the community that in which the school, the theater is located. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't ask you earlier, where did you go to college?
I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was very fortunate. I worked with some people incredible who are now big people in the industry. I love watching the Tony Awards because, there he is. Uh-huh. He just won another one, and there she is. And I worked with him, and I knew who that person was. I did that. And then I went to New York for a short time just to get the lay of the land. And then I came back down to Atlanta because my parents both had their own businesses. So I came back to Atlanta to help my parents with their businesses, worked for them for a short time, help pay off the money that they spent to send you to college. And then the theater business in Atlanta started exploding for me.
Uh-huh.
And I started getting a lot of work in Atlanta and, you know, some TV and some film work. But I just love theater. And that's really where I really focused. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just Carnegie Mellon, that's quite that's quite a place.
It was the four hardest years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to go there. I was offered opportunities at other schools around the country. But being from Pittsburgh, my parents said, no, we want you to go to Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
We still have family in Pittsburgh. They could keep an eye on me just in case. And so that was the bargain that was made. If I had the grades, if I could get in, then they would send me there. And I turned down scholarships from some other schools, which I was told to do by mom and dad because that's what they wanted for me. And I'm very grateful.
Mm-hmm. So if you could had unlimited talent and resources, what would you want to direct?
Oh, geez. I would love to do a full season where we do like a musical every month or every 2 months.
Oh, my.
A Disney show. I know. In a dream world. One of my favorite shows that I would love to do is Sweeney Todd.
Oh.
I'd love to do Sweeney Todd. There is a high school version out that many schools have done, and I've seen some incredible productions from these schools. Great acting, great directing. The problem with the high school version of Sweeney Todd, as I said earlier, is it's cut down so much. The character of Mrs. Lovett is really not showcased as well in the cut down version. So I want to do the full blown version. One of my favorite shows of all time that I just loved is a show called Ragtime.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I'm a huge fan of Scott Turow. And his father who wrote it, E.L. Doctorow, based on the novel. Yeah. And I read it. And then when I saw the musical, I would love to do a show like that because, you know, the African-American story and the immigrant story, and then it all comes together. And I love historical fiction, and the music is just so incredible in that show. So I'd love to direct that show. And then another one that is making the rounds again is Chess. They're doing a new production up in New York. I think it's a Playwrights Horizons, or I don't know which theater it is. It might be Encores. I love that show. I love the music in that show. So yeah, those are some of the shows I would love to try to do.
Yeah. Since you have such a broad view and you know what's going on in New York, what do you see as trends up there?
The whole youth thing that I said earlier,
so many
of the shows are based on that. They're going back to a lot of the classics, the golden arrows.
Yeah.
A lot of the revivals are coming back. Very interesting new takes on some shows. are very interesting.
Well, one of them was, I think they did recently, was Carousel.
Yes.
Which is a weird play. I tried to watch it and it was disturbing.
A lot. I feel the same way about it. I know a lot of people who love that show. In fact, before I came to Northwest, I think one of the shows that they did at Northwest right before I came is they did a production of Carousel. And I'm thinking, you do Carousel high school kids with that weird and the whole, you know, physical abuse issue. But yeah. But again, you can't get away from the music. You cannot get away from the music of that show, which is what makes it so great. And also, which reminds me, another show that I love directing because of the music and also had a great cast was Cinderella. I did the original Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella. Had a ball. Actually had a live horse on stage. It was great.
Oh, my.
We ended the show. We brought out a live horse with Cinderella for the final big wedding scene. Spoiler alert, it ends well. Cinderella, when they get married, we actually had a real horse, and the horse came on stage, and little kids in the audience and parents just lost their minds over the horse on stage.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, but it always comes down to the music for me. When it comes to the musicals, it comes down to the music. The story has to be good, obviously, but it's got to be good music. So.
Okay. I have just a few more questions since this is a podcast about creativity. Mm-hmm. And we don't get into high-minded definitions of it. We talk to creative people and just with their processes and stuff. So what is your creative process when you do a play, when you start a production, which you've done so many times that I...
Right. The first thing that I look at is I look at what the talent pool is. I look to see who are the kids I'm going to have that year. Who are the kids who are going to take a drama class? Who are the kids that, because of their schedule, can't necessarily be in a class, but still want to be in a show? So based on that, if I have a bunch of girls, or if I have a few guys, you know, which is a chronic problem that all high school drama teachers have, you know, so few guys, or at least, and the guys we have are wonderful, but I wish I had more of them. Anyway, so I look at the talent pool. Do I have dancers? Do I have singers? Do I have kids who are really funny? Do I have physical kids who know how to be very physical or comfortable being physical with movement, with dance? So those are things that I really focus on. Then we break it down and we talk about the story. I look at, you know, what is the story that I want to tell? I want it to be a fun experience. I personally don't like to be preached at. I don't like to preach to people when it comes to certain ideas or issues. It needs to be fun. And if there's a deeper idea or a deeper story that can get told, like a Hairspray, for example. Hairspray is a phenomenal show that tells the story about racial equality and in a very mature, very real and honest way, but it's done in a very entertaining way. So I look at those things. Does the show have something to offer aside from just being fun? It needs to be fun. It must be a fun show. Otherwise, why do it? I tell my kids all the time, if you're not having a good time, you don't have to be in the show. Go leave, go do something else. So those are the things I look at. Then of course, you know, then there's budgeting and there's, you know, what kind of resource do we have? How much set do we need to build and costumes? I look at the parents. What kind of help can I get from parents and from administration? So those are just, you know, the business sides of things that you have to deal with. But I've been very fortunate that I've had a lot of support over the years from my administration. They've never told me not to do anything because I have a pretty good sense of what the community standards are. And as I said earlier, I personally don't want to watch high school kids doing R-rated things and using language and subject matter. It just makes me feel creepy. And I want to see my kids do that. Go see that in professional theater. Go see that with adult actors. Great. But not, at least not for me.
Yeah.
So that really is where we are. And then in terms of process, I try to rehearse as much as I can during my actual class time. Okay. Because the kids are involved with sports, they have jobs, they have family obligations. It's hard to get kids together after school for many things.
Right. And I wondered about that, how you did that.
So I try to rehearse as much as I can during class, and I try to make it as much a learning opportunity as I can. So while these four or five kids are rehearsing a scene, I have these three or four kids painting or helping with lights and working microphones and sound. So trying to spread it out as much as I can. Every kid in my classes will perform at some point, even if they don't want to. Oh, hello. And my dog is invading. Every kid will perform. Every kid will memorize a speech of some kind. They will all do some acting, but I don't know how to, and I don't want to. I don't care. You're going to. There's skills you're going to need to have. Every kid learns how to use microphones. Every kid learns how to do the technical things. They all learn how to use power tools. They all learn all of these things. And that's how I try to structure the classes.
So they sign up for a class at some level to do this. Right. They have to be enrolled in a class to do that, which makes sense because then you have control over them.
There is that. But even if they cannot be in the class, they can still be in the shows. We currently run what's called an open or non-cut program, which is if you audition for the show, you're in the show.
Okay.
We don't do the thing where if you audition and you don't have as much experience or you're not tall enough or you're not this or you're not that, then you can't be in the show. I do that with our competition plays because I really kind of have to because it's competition. But even if they're not, even if a student wants me in the one act play, for example, and they don't get a role, I'll put them on the crew.
Yeah.
And I'll have them do something else with the show because they want the opportunity. And as I said earlier, that's how you learn. You learn how to do stuff by doing that. And I always have kids who walk in as freshmen or sophomores. And by the time their junior, senior year rolls around, they're stars and they're winning awards and they're getting applause. It's wonderful. So there's that. And then the other reason why I like to do a non-cut program is because you never know who you're going to get. It's happened many times and I'm not alone in this. I know there are drama teachers all over the country who've had this experience. A senior comes into audition for the musical who's played football or done marching band or cheerleading their whole high school career, never did theater, never thought about it, but they figured, what the heck? I've heard my friends do it. I'll give it a shot. And they come in, they do the musical, they have a ball. And then at the end of the show, on closing night, they're in tears and they always say the same thing. Why didn't I start doing this sooner? Yeah. So that while that's sad to hear, it's also wonderful because at least they gave it a shot. At least they got to have this experience and learn from it in some way.
Well, Josh, Mr. Rubin, this has been a fascinating conversation.
Oh,
well, and I have. So, I mean, I can see why Ryan wanted me to talk to you. I got so much out of this, and you are so articulate and such an expert on this educationally and professionally. It's like I can't believe that little Whitfield County has you. It's amazing. I want to thank you for being on the program. I've taken about an hour of your time, so I don't want
to
take up more. You're a very busy guy. Goodness.
Yeah.
Go into SpongeBob, and I'm going to check that out because when I've watched SpongeBob very rarely on television, it's like, this is bizarre. It's hyper. I can't stand it, you know?
But it's weird. Like I said, I never thought I'd become an actor. I didn't get into acting until I was in my late teens, early 20s. But looking back over it, you know, watching Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah, they're wild, too. So
there's some great acting. I mean, what Mel Blanc did there and watching professional wrestling as a little kid growing up. There's great theater going on there. Yeah. So I'm bringing all these things together and just having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah,
so
that's cool. Well, thank you again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this interview with Josh Rubin. This one has been a treat for me. In my past life, I used to direct small plays with college students. Nothing ever very big. But it's always mystified me how one could do that with high school students. I hope you will look into his productions, including the one he mentioned about SpongeBob SquarePants at the Chattanooga Theater Center, and I've put that link in the show notes. I want to thank him sincerely for spending an hour with me with everything he is involved with through the theater and the high school and the arts in our region.